This episode of The Orb is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek FM at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
This is J.G. Hertzler, General Martok on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome, Niners, to another episode of The Orb, our dedicated Deep Space Nine show. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as he is every show, is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. Matthew, why are you flipping through a book about lizards this morning?
Oh, Chris, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean for you to catch me doing that. But really been studying Cardassians and their origins. And so I have been so busy. I've been swamped with books and, well, that and Sumerian sunsets. I can't get enough.
I thought you stopped drinking those, Matthew.
You know, I did because they brought back memories to me of somebody special. But, you know, I just realized they also help me forget if I drink enough of them, so.
You know, you can fix that with a pan-galactic gargle blaster. You only need one, and then you won't remember anything anymore.
Well, that's true. That or a black hole, and you're done. So, yeah. And Quark serves all of those, luckily.
He does, yeah. And we're going to talk about Quark a little bit today. This is going to be one of our niche character episodes, I would say. We're going to talk about Natima Lang, who is the Cardassian who we see in Profit and Loss.
Not Profit and Lace. Do not
Not Profit and Lace. Yes. So don't turn this
Do
off right now.
Do not confirm this.
It's not Profit it's and
not
Lace.
Not the same.
Now, if you want to hear us talk about Profit and Lace, we have done that before. And that would be the Orb 87, Matthew, which we titled, I'm Going to Need Some Brain Bleach Now.
Yeah, I think that's actually the orb of bleach that we were talking about.
Maybe
the more
so.
The orb of mind erasing.
That's right. And it's actually written like that with an apostrophe at the end instead of a G. Okay, so now we're going to talk about Natima Lang and how she impacts Quark, how she impacts Garak, how she plays into the way the DS9 writers fleshed out the Cardassian culture. And Matthew, doing an outline for this episode, those were the key points that I came up with. And also post-TV, what happens to her in the books? I know we don't usually talk about the books here on The Orb, but this is a case where I think we should, because it will demonstrate how the writers used a single episode to set up a character who appears one time, but does play a big role in the ongoing Deep Space Nine story.
Yeah, this is a character that, you know, I'm kind of glad that we are going to talk about, because I think she is a really interesting character. And she's one of those places in which, and we were talking about this a little bit before the show, she's an example of, you know, Deep Space Nine was so good at creating characters in the cultures that weren't all like monoculture.
Right.
And I think that she is the one of the characters who helps us see how differentiated Cardassians can be and among themselves, the same ways they had started to do with Bajorans, the same ways we had seen with the Ferengi, even up to this point with like Nog and Rom being a little bit different than Quark and just kind of your base Ferengi, which we saw in the Next Generation, which were just kind of laughable, less fur. And so I
less fur.
Yeah.
That's
and
for
less,
sure.
Yeah. Less laser whips too, which thank God. And, you know, because the Cardassians were set up as the villains kind of in Deep Space Nine in a lot of ways. And this gave us a whole other picture that there were Cardassians who weren't just this militaristic type of culture, that this almost like fascist type culture that was right. So in love with their military and everything. This was showing that there really was a fleshing out of the Cardassian people. And I think that that's something that's really important when we look at Deep Space Nine as a whole. And this is one of those places. I mean, this is a second season episode that she's in, and I think it really kind of sets the stage in a lot of ways for the ways in which Deep Space Nine is going to even differentiate itself from other Star Trek series by really diving into the cultures and the characters in which inhabit those cultures and not saying, oh, well, you're a Vulcan, so you're this. Oh, you're a Klingon, so you're this. No, you're your own person, and you might be different from what you have seen before.
Yeah, absolutely. And it sets up a trend that we see throughout DS9 in the third season in Destiny. We have female Cardassian scientists who come aboard the station to study the wormhole as part of this exchange program. Not an exchange program, but like a scientific collaboration between the Federation and the Cardassian Union and the Bajorans. And that's another case where we see this type of cultural diversity that's very much needed. So Natima Lang is a professor, and she's a professor at the point that we see her in this episode, Profit and Loss, she is a professor of political ethics. Prior to that, she had been a correspondent with the Cardassian Communications Service, and that was in the days of Tarak Nor, and that's how she met Quark. And then we come to find out that she and Quark had a romantic relationship, which apparently lasted 1 month. So it must have been quite heated, because if you see how they react to each other, especially how Quark reacts to her, you might think that this was going on for years and years, but it was apparently 1 month. Those are the basics, anyway, of Natima Lang.
Yeah, and that's a really interesting thing to kind of see. And I think it's one of those places where you're doing a lot of things to open up the doors for a lot of different characters here. And just the fact that she has this kind of hot and heavy relationship with Quark that is only broken by Quark doing something that's very Quark-ish, which is, you know, using her access codes to basically steal from the Cardassian government for services he didn't provide.
I prefer to call these actions being quirky, Matthew.
That's probably better. I applaud you for your punship there, sir. But the fact that she is somebody who wins Quark's heart to the point where he sees her for first time in years, and like he just kind of drops everything he's doing to go see mm-hmm. her. It's like his entire world lights up in a way that you've never seen before. And I think that's one of the things that makes her so fascinating. And the fact that they only had a relationship that was so short is a really fascinating thing to me, that they could still have such strong feelings for one another years later. You know, it's one of those things. It's like it seems like a flash pan love affair, but it's not. This was something that actually was very real to them, and it was only when she kind of felt betrayed by Quark in a lot of ways that she was okay with ending it and leaving. And I think, you know, that's just, it adds so much to the character of Quark, but it really creates this character to which you kind of automatically, in Natima Lang, have an affinity for and like, because, you know, she's somebody who wasn't going to put up with Quark's crap.
Yeah. Well, flip it around. You think about Cardassians, especially when you think of Dukat, for example, of being very, well, and Garrick as well, being very deceitful and very conniving, and they're just dishonest. And what's the reason that she breaks it off with Quark? Because he was dishonest. He took her codes to steal money from the Cardassian government. So right there, you know, she's a very different kind of Cardassian. And as we were talking about a moment ago with cultural diversity or species diversity, this shows all Cardassians are not the militaristic Cardassians that we see. And that's, I think, really important for making Star Trek feel believable. So let's expand upon her impact on Quark, because as I was watching this episode again before this show, I was really struck by how head over heels Quark is for her. And this is the second season, and I don't recall seeing anything like this from Quark up to this point. And you and I talk about how Quark, over the course of the series, softens up and lets it out that he does care about his friends and he cares about the others on the station, even if he doesn't like to show it. And he's so effusive about her. It's incredible. I don't want to turn this into a discussion of the episode itself, but as we talk about the relationship and the impact that she has on him, was that kind of out of the blue for you?
You know, I don't feel like it was totally out of the blue, because, you know, I think that there, in everybody's life, you have that one person that you would have pretty much just dropped anything for to be with, and it just didn't work out. And if there's ever a time that you run into them again and you're single, you know something could happen, right? It's just that kind of relationship. And, you know, for Quark, it was that thing where he couldn't overcome his Ferenginess in that moment. And what's really interesting about her effect on him here is that he's still trying to overcome that Ferenginess, you know, but he's doing a little bit better job of it this time, because he really does, like, he doesn't want to let her go. And there is that sense of that Ferengi, like, he must kind of, like, own her, he must have her. But at the same time, it's also that, I found you again, there's nothing I want more than to be with you, and I don't want to let you go. And so, even if I kind of have to be a little underhanded in doing it, I'll do everything I can to keep you. And it is excising human morality, it's probably the closest we get to Quark ever being sacrificially in love, because he is kind of willing to almost sacrifice everything it means to be a Ferengi to be with her.
And well, he says he'll give the bar to Rob, and he'll...
Right, exactly.
He'll let
it
all go.
He's like, we could go anywhere. We could do anything. I'll come with you, you know? And I think what was really beautiful was the effect that she has on him. I do think this is an early key that Quark is not going to just be the prototypical Ferengi. He is going to be something that, and somebody as a Ferengi that's going to grow and to change and to move forward. But it is going to take him a long time, because even here, he's still struggling through, you know, what we would consider not so great ideas and morals and all that kind of stuff. But this episode really does highlight that Quark is a character that is rife for character development. And I love the way in which it's this relationship where he really is almost ready to give up everything it means to be a Ferengi, to be with this woman. And in a lot of ways, she's almost willing to do the exact same thing for him. Mm-hmm. And I find that fascinating, because for her as a Cardassian and a person who's completely different in him, she must see something in Quark that allows her to even contemplate the idea of leaving everything that she believes in for him. And I think that, again, it's a real key that there's something about Quark, you know, it's like there's something about Mary, but there's something about Quark that is worth investing time in. And I don't think, really, maybe up until this point, that we've ever had that thought in the series.
Oh, no, not up until this point, for sure. At least, I don't think I had. But it's interesting that, yeah, there's something about most people that could be unlocked by someone else. And the fact that this is inside Quark, first of all, as we're talking about, it's a very different take and interesting take on Ferengi by the writers. But the fact that the person who could unlock that is a Cardassian, someone who, beginning from the Next Generation forward, we have been shown as just being an evil, aggressive enemy. And here we have a very sweet-talking Cardassian professor who was a journalist who has fallen in love in the past with a Ferengi and has unlocked something in him that no one else has been able to do to this point. And even after it's over, the moment he sees her again, it all comes flooding back. And even for her, there's that moment where she wants the cloaking device and she shoots him, but it turns out it was an accident. She'd never used one of these guns before, but she made sure it was on the lowest setting. And then they really admit all their feelings to each other.
Well, and I, you know, again, I think what's fun about Natima Lang is the way in which she shows a completely different side of Cardassians. And yeah. I love the way that she kind of opens up the idea of, you know, as we saw with the, and we'll see with those scientists, and that scientists generally tend to be women on Cardassia.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Her whole sense of being is so much different than the men we see in Cardassia. And I think that's really interesting. Mm-hmm. But I also love that she is also somebody that the moment Quark shows up, she kind of tries to dismiss him
mm-hmm.
because she still does have these super strong feelings for him. And I, again, it was one of those, I think those kind of like beautiful things where the writers of Deep Space Nine kind of touch on something to where it's that relationship that we have all had. And like, if you could go back in time, you would do it differently. Or if you were right. single and you met that person again, you know, you would do it all right. Because that was, I mean, it's just a person that you click with. And it is funny to think that, like you said, there's this Cardassian woman and this Ferengi male, and somehow, some way, they click together. And that doesn't make a lot of sense. But I mean, it's something that we see in real life too. And I love it. And I think it makes it kind of a really fun and special relationship for Quark because it tells us a lot about him. But it makes her kind of this very interesting, you know, one episode character that I just honestly wish we had gotten more of in the series.
Well, she certainly could have played a role later in the series. As we'll discuss last today, things that happen to her in the novels show her importance in Cardassian government, and I think roles that she could have played, and maybe the war would have turned out differently. Who knows if they had decided to write her into the series as someone who could oppose Dukat or oppose Damar. You mentioned that it doesn't make a lot of sense, perhaps, that she and Quark could be together, but then again, a lot of relationships don't make a lot of sense, but they work really well, right? Let's move on from Natima and Quark and talk about a secondary relationship that we see in the episode, which is Natima and Garak. It's not so much a relationship between Natima and Garak, but it's just how her presence influences Garak in the actions that we see him take. As we are bit by bit in the lead up to The Wire, which happens a few episodes down the road, we're learning more and more about who Garak is or who he isn't. You know, we never really quite know, but this opens with one of those great conversations between Bashir and Garak, and it ends with Garak helping Natima and her students escape.
This is such an interesting thing because the effect that she has on Garak, you know, Garak clearly turns her in to the Cardassian government.
Because it seems that he's hoping his standing in the government might improve.
Yeah, it definitely seems as though he's hoping that his exile could end, that he could right. basically get off this stupid station, this Bajoran station, and go back home. I mean, and that what's so great about it is how much sense that makes. But the moment in which he makes that switch, that he makes that turn, and him and Quark are talking about, you know, after she's left, like why he's done it, and Quark said he did what he did for her for love. And Garak says, well, I did what I did for the love of Cardassia. And that he sees that Cardassia itself cannot continue down the path that it's on with Dukat that the military is going to ruin Cardassia, and that the leadership that led them to do something like the occupation, which is still pretty much in charge, that is the thing that is going to continue to mire Cardassia for all eternity until it changes. And I love that he can recognize that. And even though it might have benefited him personally, possibly, maybe, right, that he can put his love of his society, his people, way above that and choose to do the right thing, which is to allow Natima and her quote-unquote students to leave so that their dissident movement can continue to grow, because that's really what's going to benefit Cardassia. And it's a really heavy thing to have in this pretty funny episode, but when you really start to think about what Garrick is doing, it's a huge monumental shift for, Cardassia in general, and won't be something that we'll actually see come out in fruition till after the series is actually over and the books start getting written, because the very thing that Garrick feared is what happens by the end of the series when Cardassia is basically no more.
Right. And Garrick, he wants to end his exile because he loves Cardassia and he wants to go home, and he might see a short-term gain for himself getting back into the Obsidian Order, or at least being in better favor with the government, if he helps in this way. But yeah, it triggers. It's a perfect companion to what's happening with Quark. They both love something or someone, and they both have to let this go. Quark has to let Natima go. Garrick has to let the potential of ending his exile go for the long term. Of course, Quark loves Natima. He wants Natima to be happy. And of course, at the end of the episode, though, he does think, initially Quark thinks that she's going to stay and her students are going to go. But then she tells him that, no, she has to go as well. And he knows that he has to let her. But likewise, Garrick has to let this opportunity go for that better future for what he loves. So it's just a nice addition to the Garrick storyline, which is building so much in season two. And it comes at an unexpected moment, which so often happens on DS9.
Yeah. And I think that's what's kind of interesting here. Again, this is an episode and a character that comes in and kind of shakes up two different characters where we're not really expecting that to happen. And it kind of changes your perspective on them. It changes your perspective on a character like Quark and for Garrick. And it's all because of this one person that comes into their life. And, I think one of the things that makes Natima kind of interesting as well is that, we talked about her past. It's very interesting because she is one of those people and characters throughout Star Trek. And if you look post-TV, she becomes somebody who is always just as principled and just as sold out for Cardassia and what she believes in all the way through into the book series, and kind of continues to play an important role throughout the government and the post-TV universe, going finally back to the university, and also becoming somebody that Garrick believes could actually replace him as Castellan for Cardassia. And it's all because she has continued to be somebody who's been above the fray, one of the very few Cardassians in public life who has been able to be a beacon of light and hope in a world that's quite dusty and dark most of the time.
I'm picturing a statue of Natima with her hand raised to the sky right now.
Bring me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses. Yes, that's Natima Lang, the statue of her. But no, I think that's what it is. It's an interesting thing because, throughout history, we have those certain characters and people that have played those type of roles. And, she's not a perfect person in any way, shape, or form. And yet her life and what she stood for has always kind of been front and center. And she's been able to keep herself kind of out of the place where she's had a scandal to which has completely taken away that ability to continue to make that stand. And I think that's kind of neat to see a character like that. I think we all need to be reminded that it is possible, you know, to be a better person, to be somebody, to just strive for a better world. And part of that is being a person of good character. And Natima is a person of excellent character. And I think in a lot of ways, we just kind of need characters like that. And so, you know, I highly encourage you. She's in a few of the novels, and we don't talk too much about the novels or anything here, but I want to encourage you, if you want to check more of her out, Never Ending Sacrifice, she's a part of, Mission Gamma, the This Gray Spirit, she's a part of, and she's a huge part of the newest novel by Una McCormick, a good friend of Literary Treks, and Trek FM in Enigma Tales. And so, you know, what's neat is to see in the way in which this character, one episode, found her way into the literature and has become kind of slowly a more and more important part of it. And that's because of the legacy that she has here through this episode. And I think, you know, that's just, again, that's just kind of neat, you know?
Yeah, she has become a big part of the novels, and it's a perfect bridge between talking about her influence on Garrick and post-television. You mentioned the Castellan of the Cardassian Union. The Castellan of the Cardassian Union is the leader of the Cardassian Union. And at the end of the episode, when we see Garrick helping her escape so that she can continue her efforts to change Cardassia, as it turns out, after the series, Garrick becomes the Castellan of the Cardassian Union. And after 16 years in that role, Natima Lang takes over from him. So the two Cardassians that we see at the end of Profit and Loss eventually become back-to-back leaders of the Cardassian Union. Now, of course, her moving into that position doesn't happen yet in the novels. We have to go further into the non-canon and semi-canon world of Star Trek to Star Trek Online. But at least they picked up that thread and have moved it forward. So Una's book, Enigma Tales, ends, as you say, with her being seen by Garrick as his potential successor. And then Star Trek Online picks it up, moves it forward. But it's still, even though that's not canon, it's not on the screen, it highlights what the writers put into this character in her one appearance on television in Profit and Loss, and how they set up someone who was very different than what we were familiar with the Cardassians, and was able to be a vehicle for change.
And I think one of the things that I love in the way in which you know, Deep Space Nine does such a good job, again, we see a character here of good character. And that, you know, the fact that she could become somebody that Garrick would see as his potential successor. You know, Garrick is not somebody who we consider necessarily of good character. He's learned good character, maybe, but he also still has so much of his past in him. And whereas Natima has never been that. She's always been somebody who's had good character, and how important that is. And so when we look to our leaders, when we look to, you know, those that we would put into power, that what do we look for? And I think something like this is a great reminder that you can't put a price tag on somebody who has impeccable character. And what that comes to for Natima is somebody who has principles that cannot be shaken. And I think that's a really beautiful thing that Star Trek is saying here. And it's something that's only hinted at in the episode, but I think it's kind of wonderful because even Garrick at this point, somebody who is almost willing to sell her out to move forward, realizes, no, this is the thing that Cardassia will eventually need to be a better Cardassia. I think that's really beautiful.
Yeah. Well, I don't think there's much more to say as far as final thoughts on Natima Lang. I think you summed it up very well right there. I'm just glad to see that the writers of DS9 took races like the Cardassians and fleshed them out and showed us the diversity amongst the people, gave women important roles to play in the society. We've seen that with the scientists. We've seen that here with Natima, who was originally a journalist, became a professor, became a dissident pushing for change, became a politician who led her people to a better place. And again, they did it with, I mean, we're reading a lot into it, and it did take the novels to expand upon it. But as they always did on DS9, the writers put these strings there for people to grab, and even in just a short 45 minutes, had a strong impact on the lives of two of our characters, Quark and Garrick. So we would love to hear your thoughts on Natima Lang, Profit and Loss. We'll probably talk more about Profit and Loss in depth at some point. Maybe we'll do a commentary, Matthew. I don't know.
It sounds like a good idea to me. I do have to say, it was such a joy to rewatch this episode. It's a fantastic episode. So,
yeah, it is. And season two. It's what I tell everyone. Everyone that I hear from who says, well, I tried to watch DS9 and I just couldn't really get into it. Just get through season one and keep watching, because...
I mean, just get to the end of season one. But like the last three episodes, it's like, it's really hitting its stride. So,
yeah, Duet, In the Hands of the Prophets. You kick off season two with the Circle Trilogy. You've got great development happening all through season two. So,
but I mean, season one has gems like If Wishes Were Horses and, well, you know...
Move along home, Matthew.
Absolutely, Chris. So basically what we're saying is you don't want to miss Star Trek Deep Space Nine. I mean, you'd be crazy to miss it.
You would. And of course, we're preaching to the choir here.
That's true. Because everybody listening to The listening Orb is like, Orb. Guys, we know. We watch it, okay?
However, I say this because we all have many, many friends who are Star Trek fans who don't watch Deep Space Nine. So this is your ammunition. This is what you have to tell them to get them into the series.
Absolutely.
But anyway, let us know your thoughts on Natima Lang, on Profit and Loss. And there are many ways for you to do that. To join in the bigger discussion, of course, the best way to contact us is to go through the Babel Conference. That's our listeners group on Facebook. And that's the best place because all the listeners are there. So you can have group discussions and continue what we're talking about here on The Orb amongst yourselves there in the Babel Conference. And Matthew and I are there too, and we may chime in. You can also find us on Twitter. Our username is TrekFM. We have our main page on Facebook, facebook.com/TrekFM. And you can send us an email by going to our website, trek.fm/contact. Use the form you find there. Choose to send to a show. Choose The Orb. And that'll come to both Matthew and me by email. Now, Matthew, when you're not cooking up plans to overthrow the Cardassian government, where can people find you?
Well, Chris, that really does take up all of my time, but when I'm not thinking about that or tweeting about it, which you can find me over on Twitter at MattRushingShow2, and you can also find me on Instagram under that same moniker here on the network doing our General Geek Show, talking about all the fandoms that we love, because we love Star Trek, but there's so many other fandoms that we want to talk about. So 602 Club is that place to do that. So join us there as we're talking through those. I'm also doing a show called Aggressive Negotiations with John Mills, and that's all about Star Wars. So make sure you check that out. I do a show called Owl Post with Drea Kaufman, and that's all about Harry Potter. We're walking through, in fact, each and every chapter of that series. And so one chapter at a time. Check that out. And then there's one more show that I do called Cinema Stories. And that's all about, you know, Deep Space Nine has a lot of faith influences. And so we talk about film through the lens of faith. So again, you can find all of those on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. But Chris, when you're not running into long lost loves and trying to make them stay, where can people find you?
Matthew, how do you know about that? I tell you, you must be working for the Obsidian Order.
I couldn't tell you that, Chris, you wouldn't be alive to remember it.
I know, you're just a simple tailor. Now, when I'm not doing that, you can find me here on the network doing The Ready Room, where we talk about all five live-action Star Trek series, and I should say six now, because we have talked about Discovery a bit. Larry Nemechek and I have done several shows on that over the past year. However, we do have our dedicated Discovery podcast, The Edge, which launched in the middle of July. So we probably won't be doing a lot of Discovery talk on The Ready Room. If you want that, head over to The Edge, listen to Mike Schindler, Amy Nelson, Brandon Shea Matala, Aaron Harvey, and many, many guests talk about The Edge over there.
Chris, what have we done on The Edge of Federation Space? We've done the edge.
That's right. We went to the edge and we found the edge. So I'm not on that show, but please check it out. But yeah, The Ready Room, we talk about DS9 on there every fifth show, and we talk about all the series. So check that out. That's the only other podcast that I'm doing on the network at the moment. You can find my writing over on the official website at StarTrek.com. And otherwise, you can find me on Twitter. My username is C. Brian Jones, letter C and Brian with a Y. You can also find me on Facebook with the same username. That's my username everywhere in social media. And that's pretty much what I'm up to. Oh, and I ride the train 5 hours a day. So that's the other thing I'm doing. That's why I don't podcast so much these days. But hit me up there if you want to chat. Now, there are many other people on the network besides Matthew and me who you'll want to listen to and who you'll want to contact, because we're talking about every corner of the Star Trek universe, all the shows, all the things like music and science and philosophy and anything you can think of. And here's a quick look at some of those shows.
Previously on Trek.fm, Warp 5.
I just thought, you know, those are where, of course, some of the other Enterprise references come up. He was a Mako. He fought in those Indian Romulan Wars. I really like that background and that tie-in. And it makes sense that, you know, over the course of 100 years, that somebody's going to kind of go a little crazy and, you know, get to this point where they're just, you know, seething for some kind of revenge or something. So
The Ready Room.
Of all the things people to wonder about and question and be concerned about canon and visual canon on Discovery, the Klingons haven't concerned me that much, because I think the Klingons are ripe and long overdue for, you know, for lack of a better term, some species diversity. And one of the things that Star Trek is prey to, and people acknowledge it, but still, we wish it wasn't a limiting factor, was TV budgets.
The 602 Club.
That emotional core, and I tie that too with the mentors that Peter doesn't have throughout the film. There's nobody there to pick up that Uncle Ben slack.
And introducing The Edge, a Star Trek Discovery podcast.
What have you done out there on the edge of Federation space?
Welcome to The Edge, Trek FM's brand new podcast, where we dive into the final frontier of the newest Star Trek series, Star Trek Discovery, the first Star Trek series to be on air in 12 and a half years, something like that.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of these shows and find out what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe. You can find us everywhere that you get your podcasts. Of course, we're in iTunes/Apple Podcasts. So check us out there. Leave us a star rating and a written review if you have a moment. If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered on Android. We're in Google Play Music. We're also in third-party apps on all the platforms. Some of my favorites are Overcast, Pocket Casts. Check us out there. We're also on TuneIn, Stitcher, Spreaker, Windows Phone. You can find us pretty much anywhere you can get podcasts. We're also on SoundCloud, iHeartRadio, and The Ready Room is on Spotify. You can also go to our website, find the show pages there. You can stream or download the MP3 file. And if you want to sample everything in one easy place, just check out the Trek FM Master Feed. That contains every episode of everything that we do, and occasionally special content that's not available anywhere else. And if you want to help us keep all of this going, you can support us through Patreon. If you go to patreon.com/trekfm, that's patreon.com/trekfm, you can find out all the details. We can definitely use your support. It costs quite a lot of money to produce, host, and distribute these shows every single month. And everyone who supports us there makes it possible. Without your support, we would not be able to get The Orb or any of our other shows out there to you. So thank you so much for that. We have all kinds of perks for you. We have a special website called Patron Zone, where we do early releases and we have other goodies. We also have the Patrons Roundtable, where you can get on mic with hosts and fellow patrons and talk Star Trek, just like Matthew and I are doing right now. And you can become an associate producer of your favorite show. And I would like to thank our associate producers here on The Orb, William Murray and Kay Elizabeth Shaw. Thank you so much for your support. And I hope everyone else will go over and check out Patreon and help us continue to build Trek FM. Well, Matthew, this was fun today. Fun discussion on a very niche topic, which is what Trek FM is all about. I think I even learned a little bit from hearing your views on Natima Lang.
Well, Chris, I do what I can. But I want to say thank you so much for joining us, and we will see you next time as we gaze into the orb. Recording. Cardassian lovin' had me a blast. Cardassian lovin' happened so fast. That's Quark's song for this episode.
See, it's very appropriate. Yes.
That's your stinger.
That's my stinger. It's very appropriate. Yes.